So last time I explained how, in fact, you can easily generate using Vic theorem an expansion in powers of the coupling constant for a priori any correlation function or vacuum expectation value of products of operator of the 5-4 theory. So it's a general scheme. I didn't compute anything. I just started to show how this perturbation theory is organized in terms of, in particular, in terms of those Feynman diagrams, which represents all the different terms you obtain when applying Vic theorem to compute expectation value of observable. So, remember, we started from the 5-4 theory, so we had an action for the field which was this form, d4x 1/2 d mu phi squared plus a mass term, phi squared plus g divided by 24 phi to the 4. I am using for simplicity the Euclidean formalism. So I am in Euclidean space, but you can easily go from Euclidean formulation to the Minkowski formulation. Simply, I don't pay attention there to the I factors, etc. And from that, we have seen that, in fact, we can everything, all the correlation function of the theory, so all the objects which in the Euclidean formulation are written like that. This is the expectation value in the, using this integral, this action, and they correspond in Minkowski space to the vacuum expectation value of time order product of operator at different point of space-time in the vacuum of the interacting theory. And we have seen that we can recast everything here into a generating functional which I denoted z of g, which is defined simply by the functional integral or the path integral formulation of exponential of the action, so minus 1 over h bar the action s Euclidean of the field configuration. But I had a classical source term. So this is the variables we integrate over, and this is a classical source term g of x. So g of x at each point you associate this field. Okay. And we have seen that, in fact, by expanding this both in power of g and in power of j and in power of j, here we can in fact generate all the correlation functions. Yes? It's classical because it's a real function. It's a real function from our space-time, M, which is here is R4 into R. Okay, while phi is a random variable. Phi is something we integrate over. Okay, and the expectation value of this object, you see, in using this path integral formulation corresponds to the expectation value of operators. These are operators in Minkowski quantum operators acting on the Hilbert space of the theory. This denotes expectation value of those random variables using this integral over configuration of fields. But this is something which is just a classical function. Okay? So that's why we call it a classical source. Okay? So, okay, and we have seen that, in fact, it's slightly more convenient, and I will use that in order to use another generating functional, which is simply the logarithm of this big functional. Okay? I multiply it by h bar for some reason. And then we have seen that, in fact, this generating functional contains, in fact, all the completely connected diagram of the series. So you can rewrite this as a function of G as a sum, you see, over all connected diagrams of the theory you can construct, you can think of, okay? And what are the same associated to a connected diagram? Let us call the connected diagram just G. G will denote any diagram. So there is a term. So a connected diagram is a diagram such that you have, you see, you have propagators, you have vertices, and you have external lines. And to each external line is attached an external vertex, and at each external vertex is attached a field G. So this is G at this point, this is G at this point, this is G at this point, etc., etc., and this is a connected diagram G. Okay, and we are summing over all possible connected diagrams, and to each connected diagram is associated, of course, a physical quantity, part of this expectation value. And what is it? In fact, it is something. So there is first, there is a factor to a diagram. There is, we have seen that there is, we expect a factor minus g to the power the number of internal vertices of the theory, because to each internal vertex comes out a minus g phi 4 term. Okay. We have seen that I gave you arguments that in fact there is an h bar, there is a factor h bar, which is simply the number of loops of G. So the number of internal vertices of G, of the diagram G. Here I have the number of loops of the diagrams. There is a factor h bar. And then, of course, I have this combinatoric factor that I denoted last time, C of G, which is just this combinatoric factor coming from the fact that we can get the same Feynman diagram by applying different pairing in the Vick theorem, so there is a combinatorics. And then at the end, you have, of course, something that I didn't discuss at all, which is the big integral associated to the integral G, which is depends on the external point z1, zn, and which is the integral over the position of the internal vertices x1, xk, if k is a number of internal vertex, here, that's what I denoted k, I'm sorry, k yesterday. And I have to integrate over all the position of the internal vertices, the products of Feynman propagators and this, it is this number which contains all the physics of the associated to the process described by the Feynman graph G. Okay, so at the moment I just have discussed the combinatorics and have not discussed at all what is the physics of such a process, which is contained, of course, in this quantity. Yes. Labeled by. Oh, that's no. The external vertices are labeled by G. And the internal vertices are labeled by. By an x. So they are not labeled by the same thing. I'm sorry, perhaps I have misunderstood.
A of z, and so each of them have different arguments that we're integrating over, right?
Where? Which one?
The j's, each of them have different arguments that
yes,
you're integrating
over. Yes, in fact, when I write this, this is g of z1. This was a very compact way to write g of z1, z of z2. G of the n, okay, and but of course then I integrate over all the positions of G. So this is given by the sum over all connected diagrams of these quantities, and at that step I integrate also. So this is an amplitude, and here I integrate over the Z and the Z I. Z's. Okay. So I have an integrate over the Z's of the contribution of diagram with fixed external legs here. And then for each diagram is associated this amplitude. So you see. Yes?
What do you mean with the number of internal lenses of Z?
Okay, so let me go back to a few examples.
What do you mean with the Z?
Right? Oh, G is just a diagram. So here is a diagram.
It's also the coupling now, it's quite confusing.
Yeah, I'm writing badly. Okay. Right. Here is what I call the diagram. G. Curly capital, you know.
Okay, so it's like the number of the diagram.
Yeah, it's just it's a bad notation. Okay, let us consider that this is very bad at calligraphy. Okay, it's just like that. So this is diagram. So here is a diagram G, you see, and it has one, so k equal one. And the number of external vertices is 2. And the number of loops, obviously, the number of loops is 1. Here is another diagram I drew last time. It's a diagram which is one of the first non-trivial diagrams in the four-point function. It has, of course, then k equal 2, 2 internal vertex. It has n equal 4. External vertex, its number of loops is 1, indeed. Okay, and I also had this diagram, for instance, which is much simpler. It has n k equal 1, n equal 4, number of loops equal 0. Okay. And here there is a point Z1, Z2, Z1, Z2, Z3, Z4, okay? Yes?
Okay, on the left side, you said that you integrate over the Z's.
Yeah, I have any way to... So I integrate over all the Z's. So for instance, what is the amplitude associated to this diagram, for instance? What is what I call I of this diagram? It is given by the so here I have a point x1, here I have a point x2, and the amplitude associated to this diagram is a function, of course, of z1 up to z4, so the function of the four position of this point, and it is given simply by the integral over the position of the two internal vertices, v4 x1, v4 x2, you see. And then I have to integrate over the products of all the propagators, the Feynman propagators, associated to this line. So here I have, what do I have? I have a propagator between Z1 and X1. I have a propagator between Z2 and X1. I have a propagator between Z3 and X2. I have a propagator between Z4 and X2, okay? So here I am for the four external legs, and then I have two propagators joining X1 and X2. Therefore, I have G of X1 minus X2 squared, because I have two propagators, so I have two times the same propagator. So, I know this function. We calculated it 2 days ago. Yes?
I think the question was actually why you're integrating over the z's in the generating function.
Oh, that's because the generating function is defined by an iteration over g, because these terms represent g5 represents just one compact way g of z phi of z.
Okay, it was a compact way to represent this integration of the product of the function g by the field phi. So I integrate the classical source term by the random variable. And when I expand the value of g, for instance, to second order in g, the term of order 2, the term of order 2 in g of z, of course, in w of g, the term which is of the form integral dz1, integral dz2 over four-dimensional space of g of z1, g of z2 times some function, let us call it w index 2 of z1 and z2, you see? Is it clear? So, to write w of g is a compact way to represent by an integral like that with source term quantities like that. It is this quantity, this function of the external of the position of the external vertices, which are represented by this sum of contribution associated to the different Feynman diagrams. Yeah?
So what's on the left, right-hand side does not include the integration of the
set? It's... Oh, yes. So what I represented here is this quantity before I integrate over the z. But what I represent here is the contribution where I integrate. So in fact, I should have really written integral, well, of course, I sum over all connected diagrams, so I should have written something, a sum over connected diagrams G of integral over dz1 up to dzn, multiple integral, and depending, of course, of the number of external legs of the connected diagram. You see? So these systems contain the sum over diagrams of an integral over the position, the factor g, and times the contribution here of each individual diagram. Okay. So it's a very, very compact way, but convenient way, to manipulate all the diagram by formal, or at least mathematical manipulation. Okay? So that's the idea. Okay? Okay? Okay. So we have seen also last time that this is given, in fact, by a sum over many, many diagrams. So the physical correlation function of the quantum theory is given by the sum of contribution coming from diagrams which can be connected, but they may be disconnected. It's convenient to consider only the connected diagram because you have much less diagrams. And now we have seen also that, so there are connected diagrams. There are diagrams. Then there are connected diagrams, and then we have seen that there are what is called one particle or one line irreducible diagrams, which are even simpler. And for instance, this part of the diagram here is irreducible because if I cut the line, I get just a single point which is connected. This part of the diagram is irreducible because if I cut a line, I still get a connected diagram. But this diagram is not irreducible because if I cut this line, this point, this vertex, is disconnected from the remaining part of the diagram. So here are what is called the irreducible part of the diagram. It can be a single vertex. It can be a closed loop like that. It can be a closed loop like that. This is a closed loop with one vertex, a closed loop with two vertex. Okay? But, and from that, in fact, you can reconstruct all the diagrams out of irreducible part and propagators, joining irreducible part by propagators. You see? Okay. So, now what I wanted to do in the first part of this lecture is to
start to show you the real power of functional integration or path integral method, because I will start to compute not only to do combinatorics, but I will start to compute something non-trivial using method of path integral formulation. So, let us keep this at the moment, and I hope this is clear. I can keep that, and I want to introduce you with an object which plays a very important role in quantum theory, which is called it's a quantum object, but it's called the effective action. So you have seen that the classical theory of this scalar field, interacting scalar field, is given by this classical action. This is a classical action, and you can derive the classical equation of motion by computing what are the Euler-Lagrange equations derived from this action for the field, for the classical field. So this is a classical action. And the question is, is there in quantum theory an analog for the quantum theory of an action for a classical theory? Okay. Because it will be very useful to compute things. So, if I consider, so let me define what is a quantum effective action in a somewhat abstract way, and then we shall compute it. So, if I start from this quantity, okay? So I start from this action, I had a source term, then I have this function W of G which generates all the connected diagram, okay? And I can easily compute what is the functional derivative of W of G when I make a variation with the source, the classical source M at a given position Z. Okay, and this is simply given. Remember that this is the logarithm of this. So when I take a derivative, so this is simply, of course, 1 over Z of G. There is a factor h bar. It's its functional derivative of z of g divided by g at the position z. Okay? But you can easily see that when I compute the functional derivative with respect to the source term at the position z of g, what do I get? I get a factor phi of z divided by 1 over h bar. So this is simply the expectation value of the field considered as a random variable at point G, okay, but not in the interacting theory given by this term, in the interacting theorem where G, G is different from zero. So in fact, it's the expectation value of the field phi, but in the theory where the action is given by this term, S of phi minus G phi. You see? So it's a vacuum expectation value of phi in when with a source G of Z. G. Okay. Okay? And let us call this, so this is a function. Given a given G, this object is a function of Z because it's the expectation value of a field, so therefore it's a function of Z. You have integrated already. So it's a function of Z. It's a function of Z. It's a function of Z. Okay? And let us denote this function var phi of z. Okay.
if you are used to a bit of text, this is capital phi, and this is little phi. So, okay. So I will denote. So of course, this function phi of z is a functional of g. Okay, this object. So this phi of g, phi of z. Is what will be called the background field. Background field. Okay, so this object, phi of z, which is the expectation value of the quantum field phi at point z as a function of the source term, is a classical field. Okay, so this object, remember, this is, I call it phi of z. It's a functional of G. It's a function of Z of the position and the functional of the source term. And it's called the background field. So it's a classical field. Okay? Yes?
Can you explain the
first step? Oh, you want that I derive precisely the step between this and this?
No.
That's the expectation value because it corresponds simply to the expectation. Oh, V means vacuum. I'm sorry. I'm so used to this abbreviation.
Expectation value.
This means this. This is a quantum expectation value of an operator in the vacuum state. I'm sorry. It's such a common expression in theoretical physics that we are used to it. Okay. So vacuum expectation value is this object. Okay. So you see, yes? Sorry. Well, yes, it's because simply because it corresponds to this object in the Euclidean theory. So, do you want me to derive quickly? Oh, this is because, let me compute this object slightly. I get that this object is simply the, so let me consider this part of the expression. This part of the expression is simply d phi exponential minus 1 over h bar s e of phi plus G plus integral of z over z of g of z times phi of z divided by 1 over h bar. Okay, so this is this. And when I take the functional derivative with respect of z of g, I get, well, this is, in fact, I should write it z of x because that's, I'm integrating over x. And here I get simply a 1 over h bar phi of z. Okay? I take the derivative with respect to g of this, the integral of this exponential, then there is just a 1 over h bar phi of z, which comes down from the exponential. And therefore, when I had this and this, I get an h bar divided by h bar, which cancels to 1. And on the denominator, I get d phi exponential of minus 1 over h bar s e of phi minus g phi. Okay? So you see that this corresponds simply to the expectation value of phi of z using in the theory given by this action. Okay? Okay. So basically we shall need that. And then, pardon? Yes?
This is a function of z, but it's a function of j?
Yeah, it's a function of z, because what I mean by that, it's a function of z because, of course, I am taking the function, the derivative with respect to the value of the source field at a specific point, z. You see? Okay, so the result is a function of the point where in space-time where you have taken the functional derivative. Okay, but now this you are computing this expectation value using this action. So it depends on the classical source terms, but it depends on the value of the classical source terms everywhere in space-time. It doesn't depend only on the value of the source term at the point where you have considered. So this is a function of z, but compute it, if you compute it for when g equals 0 or when g is a constant field or if g is a variable field located in a specific area, region of space-time, you will get a different result for this function. So this is a function of the position of space-time which depends on the wool shape of the classical source term. You see? So it's a function of two variables, a position and a function. So you have to get a little bit used to that, but it's just a function of two variables. Simply, one of the variables is a function. You see? So it's a function. So considered, if you consider phi as a function, this is a function which depends on a function. You see, you can see that phi considered as a function depends on the function g. You see? So instead of having so it's a function depending on the function. Okay? But those two functions live in the same space. Yes?
Yesterday you showed us that if you take the derivative with more than one z, of one j,
yes,
and you get the vacuum expectation value of more than one phi.
Yes, that's precisely what I explained yesterday. If you consider the second derivative, the derivative with respect to 2g, what you will get is... That's what I explained last time. If you consider the derivative with respect to g at the point z1 and then the functional derivative with respect to g at the point z2 of w of g, what we will get is the expectation value of phi at point z1, the expectation value of phi at point z2, minus the expectation value of phi at of the phi at point z1 times the expectation value of phi at the point z2. Okay? And everything being calculated in the presence of the source term. So that this is by definition what we called phi of z1, phi of z2 connected. Okay? So it's a simple exercise using the same method to take two derivatives and to check that you obtain this. The difference between those two terms. Yes?
Normally we take the difference but that the source is turned off.
Yes, but here G is not yet, G is not set to zero. Okay? And if G is not set to zero, this can be different from zero. You see? Because simply you force by this, if phi is positive, it costs, the action is lowered, so this is a more probable configuration, you see. So if g is different from zero, the vacuum can get an expectation value for the field phi. The phi operator can get an expectation value in the vacuum if g is different from zero. You see? Okay. Okay, but for the moment, we shall need only that. Oh, going slowly, but it requires explanation. Okay, so, well, basically, you have to understand this quantity. So now, let me erase this and continue the calculation. Okay. So now, so you have to understand something. The source term G of Z, the source, is something like putting a constraint or an external force on the system, on your field, and what is this expectation value of phi at the point z, which I did need, which I called the background field phi. This is simply the response of the system, which is a quantum field. Okay. So you change a little bit the dynamic of the system by adding a source term. You put a constraint, an external constraint of your system, and then the system's response, it reacts to the constraint by the fact that the field gets an expectation value in the vacuum. You see, the vacuum of the system changes, and in this new vacuum, the field operator phi gets an expectation value. You see? And everywhere in physics, you have to consider how a system responds to a constraint. For instance, in thermodynamics, if you consider the simplest example is a perfect gas. You know, when you learn the first the basics of thermodynamics, you consider a perfect gas in a box. Usually, the volume of the box is fixed, and you get from the equation of perfect gas, you get as a function, if you know the temperature of the gas and the volume of the box and the number of molecules in your box, you know the pressure. Okay. But what is the pressure? The pressure is simply how the system reacts when you change the volume. If you change the volume, the system changes its energy. Therefore, the variation of the energy of the system when you change the volume gives you the pressure. So the volume, you may consider it as a constraint on the system. Your system is constrained to stay in the box. And when you vary this constraint, the system reacts by changing its energy. See? So it's like that here. Instead of a pressure, I consider this source term. Instead of considering the energy, I consider the expectation value of the field. And in thermodynamics, now if you want to consider what are the properties of a gas as a function of the pressure, instead of as a pressure function of its volume, what you have to do is to, instead of considering what is the energy of the system, you have to consider what is its enthalpy. You see? And the difference between those two quantities is given by what is called in mathematics a Legendre. Transform. And here we shall do exactly the same thing. So I start from a system which is described by the functional W of G, which tells me what are the properties of the quantum field as a function of the source term. And I will be interested in what are the properties of the system as a function of the background field. Now, so this describes what are the properties as a function of G of Z. And now I'm asking, what are the properties of my quantum field as a function of the background field here? And to do that, I will define an object which is precisely what is called the effective action. The effective action, which is defined in a very simple way. Let me take this following quantity, g dot phi. So I consider g dot phi minus w of g. Okay? So to any value of g, I can attach the function of phi. So you see, for a given function g, there is a given phi. I can compute by this recipe. So now I consider the products of G with phi, which mean, in fact, of course, integral d4x G of x phi of x minus W of G. Okay? And let me call this a new function, which is capital gamma. Of course, it's a function of G. It's a function of G, and it's a function of phi, and phi is a function of G. But, yes? Yes. Yeah, it's, you know, g dot phi is just a compact notation to write this integral over g of x times phi of x. So it's exactly like, it's a compact notation which is similar to the scalar product, because you may consider that g is just a vector, and each component of the vector is a value of the function at a given point of space. So you can play, consider that this function g is just a vector whose component of g of x for all the points x belonging to the space. Okay? So it's an infinite dimensional vector. It's the same thing for phi of x, x belonging to m. And you see here that I am taking the value, the element of the vector at point x, the element of phi at point x, I am summing over all elements. So it's similar to a scalar product. No, phi is a function. No, no, it's a classical function. G is a classical function, and this is the curly phi. This is not the quantum field capital phi, like that. This is the result, the expectation value. So both are classical function. That's what I... both G and phi are classical functions. You see? Okay? So you have a classical function which depends on another classical function. Or if you prefer to think in terms of infinite dimensional vectors, vectors in an infinite dimensional space, you have a vector phi depending on another vector g. You see? So you have an application which is a non-linear mapping from an infinite dimensional vector space into another infinite dimensional vector space. You see? Yes?
If you go back to the analogy of thermodynamics.
Yes. It's the analog rather of the enthalpy. I will go that immediately. For the moment, I've just defined this object. Okay. So, let me define this object. So, it's a mathematical definition. And now, here is the main trick. The main trick is to make a change of variables. And instead of considering this object, capital gamma, as a function of G, I will consider it as a function of phi. Okay, I just make a change of variable. This is a function of G, because phi is a function of, here, phi is a function of G, so in fact it's a functional of G. It's a function which depends on the, it's a function which depends on the function g, so it's a functional. And in this notation, I've just switched, and I assume that here, g is a functional of phi. I just make a change of variable. Yes?
So, just to clarify, over there where you have the functional derivative,
yes,
w respectively,
yes,
these two, the thing in the bracket and the thing on the bottom, the two j's, are the same? Or
yes, they are the same. Here, what I'm doing here is that I start from a G. I start from a given G. I change it into G plus a variation of G. I compute the first order, the result, and then I take this to zero. So I start from G, I make a small variation, I compute the result, and then I let it to zero. So this is just an ordinary derivative at a point. It's like going from X to X plus, plus delta X. For a function which depends on one variable, you see? So I'm doing exactly here what we do in ordinary differential calculus. So simply I'm doing differential calculus on functions depending on functions instead of considering ordinary functions which are numbers depending on other numbers.
But that's exactly the same. So you have to get used that you are considering a more complicated object, but in fact, the rules are exactly the same. Yes? I will come back later. Why do I call this the effective action? That's simply because, in fact, with a bit of calculation, I won't have time to discuss that, you can show that this gamma of phi, okay, corresponds simply to compute what is the expectation value of the original action of your model. Okay? So, in the same way that here I am computing the expectation value of the field phi in the presence of the source term G, I can compute a more complicated object, which is the expectation value of the classical action. Classical action in the presence of the source term G. You see? And now, so, let me compute this. If I compute this, I won't do that exactly. This, I get a function, I get a number, this is an expectation value of something, so I get a number which depends on the function g. Yes?
No, but this a.
Yes?
S gives you, s is a function null, so you put in phi and you get out a number, right?
Yeah, but s is a function null of the field phi. But if I make the average with respect to the field phi, I get a number. You understand?
I mean, it's just let's say S of phi is already a number, so it doesn't depend on phi anymore.
No. Yes. Yeah, of course. No. S is a number depending on phi. Phi is a random variable that I'm integrating over. Once I have integrated over, I get a number. This number depends on the source term function g. So this number is a functional of g. It's an application which, to a given g, associate a number. Okay? This number, let me call it gamma. This number is a function of g. But now, re-express g as a function of phi with what we say that. So let us redo this. Of the expectation value of phi z as a function of g, which I call phi of z. You see? So, here is one definition of the effective action. By the way, this relation is what is defined the Lejeune transform. So if I make this this transformation, with the relation that phi of z is given by the derivative of W of g with respect to phi of z. Okay? Is what's defined in the Lejeune transform. Okay? So, but you see that in fact, this quantity, the Lejeune transform of the generating function for the connected diagrams, in fact, corresponds simply to the expectation value of the classical action of the theory, considered now as an operator, expressed not in terms of the source term, but as a function of the expectation value of the field. So, the effective action is something which is a bit subtle. It is simply the expectation value of the classical action of the theory expressed as a function of the expectation value of the field operator of the theory. You see? You have to get, you just need some guy, some gymnastic. Effective action equals, or let me
implies it.
Just because it should be.
You have to keep that in mind. Quantum effective action. Action equal expectation value of the classical action of the theory expressed as a function of the expectation value of the field operator of the theory. So phi is the expectation value of the field operator capital phi, and gamma of phi defined by this Poisson transform turns out to be the expectation value of the classical action. You see? Pardon?
Are we even sure that we can always invert that
phi? Very good question. We aren't sure at all. And in general, it's a very complicated problem. But if you work a bit hard, you show that you can do it order by order in perturbation theory. So, of course, there is this inversion of variable going from G to phi to phi to G. Is a non-trivial problem, but it can be done. Can be done in perturbation theory. Okay. Okay. And so you see that this quantum effective action, in fact. Is the object which is in quantum theory the analog of what is a classical action in a classical theory. So you expect that if you can compute what is a quantum effective action of a theory, you can you will derive a lot of information about the property of the field, of the quantum field, you see? For instance, and let me give an example of application, a trivial application. Example, okay. Remember that we had this relation that phi of z is the functional derivative of w of g divided by g of z, okay. Now, there is a very general property of the Legendre transform, which is that the Legendre transform is involutive. And a property of the Legendre transform, and I will rewrite it in that way. Remember, I have written that gamma of phi equal g phi minus w of g. Let me rewrite it in other way. Let me put the W here and the gamma here. This is equivalent to write that W of G equal phi G minus gamma of phi. Okay, I've done nothing. But the very nice properties of the Legendre transform is that this implies that we also have that G of Z is the functional derivative of the of the effective action with respect to phi of Z, the background field. So you see that the Legendre transform is perfectly symmetric if you express phi as a function of G, or if you consider G as a function of phi. You see? And it's a general properties of the mathematical object which is defined, which is called the Legendre transform. So it's a very general properties for any function, W of some variable G. You take its Legendre transform defined in that way by those two equations,
and you get its Lesson transform, and whatever the function is, you have this symmetric relation. Okay? And what does it mean, this symmetric relation? Let us consider the case where what's happened if G of Z is zero everywhere. Okay? If G of Z is zero everywhere, this means here that the functional derivative of gamma of phi divided by delta of phi of Z is equal to zero. Okay? But in that case, what is gamma of phi? In this expression, then phi of Z is just the expectation value of the operator phi at point Z in the case G equals zero. So it's the expectation value of the field phi in the original theory with no source term. You see? So this relation and these relations tells us that the expectation value of the field phi in the original theory, on the original quantum theory where we have not added any source terms, is nothing but a minimum of the effective action. Well, because its derivative is zero. So, you see? Well, in fact, it's an extremum, but if you work a little bit more, you will discover that it is a minimum. So, if you are able to compute the effective action, you see? You compute the effective action as a function of phi. It's a complicated object you compute in a quantum theory. And it's an object like that. Its minimum gives you the expectation value of the field operator in the quantum theory. You see? So here is an example of a physical information on the quantum theory, which is contained in the effective action. In the quantum effective action. Yes?
Does gamma have a physical interpretation? Because W is similar to a free energy.
To?
A free energy.
Yes, it's, that's what I explained at the beginning. For instance, in thermodynamics, gamma is, for instance, analog of the enthalpy. If you study the properties of the system as a function of its of the pressure instead of as a function of the volume, it's also, if you make a Legendre transform with respect to the, I think, the temperature, it's the analog of the free energy. So they're everywhere. And you, if you do both, you get the free enthalpy, etc. So it has the same physical interpretation, similar. So it contains information about the properties of the quantum system as a function of the expectation value of the field operator of this quantum system. So, you see? And it's given, in fact, by this quantity. It is the expectation value of the classical action in the quantum theory expressed as a function of the expectation value of the field operator of the theory. You see? And that's why it is called an effective or quantum action. It's the simplest generalization of the action in a quantum theory. Okay? Okay. So I'm going very, very slowly, but that's good because that means that you are asking a lot of questions. And what I wanted to show you briefly is that now you can this seems a very, very complicated object. Because you see, you have to compute expectation value of fields, then you make a very complicated change of variables, and you compute this object. So it seems a very, very a nice object with a nice property, but it seems a complicated object. In fact, this object is very easy to compute using functional integral formalism. And I think I will start to explain to you the idea of the result without going into the detail during the last quarter of an hour I have. Okay? So, let me now
So what should I need? I think I just... Okay, so I keep this definition of the effective action here. It's thought to be a bit messy, but... And... So what I want to do is that using simple Gaussian integrations, compute the effective action at first order in Planck constant. Okay? So let us do that. We start from a theory which is we start from a theory which is given by some action that I some classical action S of phi, which is a classical action. Okay. Now we have seen that the generating function for all the vacuum diagram, for all the diagram, is given by this functional integral minus 1 over h bar s of phi minus g phi. Okay? So, let us consider, well, this is a shorthand notation for this products of two infinite functions. Okay? Function depending on an infinite number of variables. Okay? But now I want to compute this object to first order in h bar. How do I use that? You know, I look for the saddle point. For the saddle point in this functional integral. The saddle point in this functional integral is some field configuration phi c. C is for just it's a critical point, okay? And phi c is given by the extremum of this equation, namely, is defined by the equation that g is equal to delta s of phi divided by phi. In fact, it's a function phi c of x, where g of x is given by the functional derivative of this. Okay? So this is a saddle point. This saddle point is, of course, is a function null of g. Okay? Okay? So let me write this equation in a simple way as g equal s prime of phi. Okay, I do everything as if instead of being functions, these were just ordinary numbers or ordinary vectors. So I write just this equation as g prime equals the derivative of phi. Shortened notation, but very useful notation. Okay, now I can expand phi as phi c plus h bar to the power one half, some perturbation, small term, phi term, okay? And in this case, what does this term become? This integral becomes simply z of g equal integral over d of phi tilde. Then I have an exponential of minus 1 over h bar s of phi c minus g times phi c. This is the contribution of the first term. Then I have a second order term, which is in fact vanishes because of this linear. And then I get times an exponential of minus one half of something I will write simply as phi tilde s, the secondary derivative of the action at for the saddle point field configuration times phi tilde. Okay? And then you have, so you see here that there is a 1 over h bar. Here there is no h bar. And then you have higher order terms, which are order h bar, etc. in this expansion. Yes?
In the front that we're ignoring?
I have some factor h bar in front in the measure, but I don't care about that because they will disappear from the calculation. Okay? So Yes?
How do you do that expansion? The expansion of five.
This is a. I just changed the variable.
Okay.
This is just a change of variables. I have some point in configuration space, in the space of fields, which is a saddle point of this equation. And then I just change the variables, and I decide that the origin of my variables is this field. Okay? This is just a change of variable. Change of variables. Of variables. Okay? So this is the Gaussian integral. So what does this mean? In fact, it's a very compact notation for integral over dx, integral over dy, phi tilde of x, phi tilde of y, and the second functional derivative of the action of phi at the field configuration. So this is a short, convenient, but shortened notation for this object. Okay? Okay? But now, this is a Gaussian integral. You see, you just have to integrate over phi the exponential of a quadratic form. So what is this? This is simply, I have first this classical term, exponential of minus 1 over h bar, s of phi c minus g times phi c times, well, the determinant of this object. Okay, this object is a kernel of an operator acting on the space of functions, so it has a determinant to the power minus 1/2. Results of Gaussian integration. You see? And therefore, okay. Pardon? Is it? Oh, yes, there is a square root of 2 pi. But it will be unimportant in the following. It will be a normalization factor, but you are right. You are perfectly right. Okay? So now, you see, I can compute what is W of G. W of G is simply h bar times the logarithm of z of g. Therefore, what is it? It is g phi c minus s of phi c. There is a minus 1/2, I'm sorry, very important. Minus 1/2. There is a factor h bar because I'm multiplying by h bar, and the logarithm of the determinant. Logarithm of the determinant of this operator divided by 2 pi. Okay? Good. And all the rest terms which are contained in this complicated are in fact of order h bar squared, so they are negligible at leading order in h bar. Okay? So now, let us compute the Legendre transform of this object. So this is given by g times phi, g phi minus w of g with phi equal the functional derivative of w with respect to g. You see? So this is a calculation which is a bit complicated because you have to remember that in this calculation, phi c depends on the source term g because it is given by this equation, g equal, s prime, the derivative of phi c. So this gives you an equation. Okay? But therefore, in fact, phi is not simply equal to phi c. It's given by so if you compute this calculation, you discover that phi is equal to phi c plus some correction terms. You see? So it's a phi is equal to phi c, where phi c depends on g. And there are correction terms of order h bar times something that I don't know. Okay? But if you do that, something that I don't really know what it is. Okay? But you don't really need to know what it is, because it's sufficient to know that the background field phi is equal to phi c, which is a function of g, plus some correction. You plug this back into this equation, and you discover that gamma of phi is a little bit of easy calculation. So if I compute gamma of phi, I have first s of phi c, but phi c is almost equal to phi, the background field, so you have a contribution which is s of phi, okay? The classical action. So this is a quantum action, effective action. This is a classical action, okay? Then you might have done those terms which come from g, phi c, which depend on c, but because of this equation, those terms disappear, and you end up with just the contribution of this term in W. So there is a minus sign, so you get here an h bar over 2. You can rewrite the logarithm of the determinant as the trace of the logarithm of this determinant, of this operator, s dot of phi c, well, if you want, divided by 2p, if you are. But we know that this is s, the second derivative of the action with respect to phi c. But since phi c is equal to the background field plus correction of order h bar, the difference if you replace phi c by the background field phi will be of order h bar squared. So you get the final results, which is a very important result. Which is here. And you see, it's a very compact result. It tells you that for a theory with a phi, which is a, of course, it has to be a scalar field in that case. It's a field which carries no spin indices. Whatever the action of the model is, the classical action is, the quantum action is given by the classical action plus a quantum correction. Quantum correction. And this quantum correction at leading order in h bar is just the trace of a logarithm of an operator, and this operator is the second derivative of s with respect to phi. So it's called, in fact, this is an operator which is called the Hessian of the action, the classical action S of phi, because it's just the second derivative, it's the curvature, if you want, it's the curvature, the second derivative, the curvature of the function S expressed as a function of phi. Okay? And that's a formula which is very general. It's true for any theory, provided that, in fact, so this formula is completely general. Provided that the fields phi are bosonic. Namely, there is spin 0. In fact, you can generalize that to spin 1, etc., to spin 2. So, provided that the field obey the Fermi, the Bose-Einstein statistics, this formula can be generalized. You have to take into account the indices of the field. It's a bit more complicated. But this formula is true for a scalar field. It's true for the Maxwell field, it's true for the graviton, it's even true if you try to quantize general relativity. Yes?
It's also general
in the coupling constant, in but in first order, first loop.
Yes, yes. Here I have not used anything about the form of the action. I just assume that there is an action and it has a local extrema. Yes?
I just wanted to point out, before you showed that the powers of H bar correspond to loops.
Yes.
So this has got one power, this correction has one power of H bar, so it's a one.
Yes, and that's a formula which is valid at first order. H bar. Therefore, we expect that it incorporates the combination of all one loop diagrams of the theory. Okay? So, if what I explained with diagrams yesterday is correct, this compact formula, which involves only fields and operators, contains the contribution in this very short formula, are hidden all the one loop diagram of any quantum field theory. You see? So I have been able to derive this formula using simply the property of a Gaussian integration in an integration over the field configuration. But it contains a lot of information about the structure of the theory in terms of Feynman, an expansion in Feynman diagram. And I'm going to explain that Monday because my time is over. Yes?
In your quantum action, why don't you get a star term? Because that H bar star is order H bar as well. H bar star, you've got that phi equals.
Well, this is something which is of order 1.
So you need that here.
No, in fact, the point is that I cannot neglect it here in the definition of phi, the function of phi c. But the point is that I have no time to explain that, but it's an exercise. You know. Check that starting from this definition for WOG, this definition for the effective action, the fact that phi c satisfies, as a function of g, satisfies this equation, and show that phi is equal to phi c plus some sig of order 1, and when you put this into this equation, there is a potential dangerous term of order h bar proportional to this one. So in fact, there could be of course something involving this term that I don't compute here.
Yeah.
Okay, there could be one here, but it turns out that it is equal to 0. It's basically, you find that it is this term minus this term because of this equation. And that's enough. So you don't have to, you can compute it, that's a good exercise. But you don't need to compute it to show that this term is absent. And therefore, you end up with this very simple form. It looks magical, but it's just a consequence of the Gaussian integration we have to perform. So you see? But of course, the crucial point is that this term disappears. Yes?
Is this result similar to what you get when you're trying to connect the Hamilton-Jacob equation and the Schrödinger equation?
I'm not sure. I know that you can formulate a connection between the one way to write the Hamilton-Jacob equation and to connect them to the equation of motion for the action. It is through a Lejeune transform too. But at the level, this is really a quantum result. So I'm not sure it has a classical analogy. But the relation between the Euler-Lagrange formulation of classical mechanics and the Hamiltonian or the Hamilton-Jacob formulation of classical mechanics is also through a Lejeune transform. So Lejeune transforms are everywhere in physics.
But that's really a quantum result. So you see that using functional integral method or path integral method, you get in a quick way a very deep and compact result, which of course you can derive it for some specific theory using canonical quantization if you define properly what is a quantum action in a canonical formulation, but you will not be able to do it in full generality for any quantum field theory using canonical quantization, because you first need to take a theory, construct the states, construct the Hamiltonian, construct the operator, then you can compute. Here, I assume that there is a functional integral formulation of something. I apply Gaussian integration, and what I get is that if this functional integration makes sense, which is not obvious at all, but if it makes sense, here is the general formula for the quantum effective action of the theory. Whatever the theory is, you see. So path integral methods are, in fact, start to become very, very powerful if you consider such a thing. Okay? So, well, see you on Monday. So I will make the contact for the 5-4 theory, which I will show you that this contains all the irreducible, all the one-loop diagrams. But now it can go very fast to the color of the 5-4. Thank you. Yes. 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 There is a factor of H bar here. Yes. Yeah.
Well, that was a nice cut.
It's a